Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here, and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Let's talk about water. It's the thing you hope you just sat in on the subway. According to doctors, we're supposed to drink water basically every day. And in America, most of us do that with the help of these. The number one packaged drink in the United States isn't Coke or Gatorade or even Haterade. It's bottled water. We Americans buy 50 billion disposable water bottles a year. And I know what you're thinking, oh shit, another depressing environment story. So can I not even drink water without ruining my children's future? But that's the thing. This is one environment story that actually has a really easy solution. And I'm gonna tell you what it is in another installment of Long Story Short. For most of human history, people got by fine without bottled water. People got water from their well or the local stream or by throwing a virgin into a volcano so it would rain. It was a perfect system. But water bottles started to become popular in the 80s, mainly for health reasons. In 1986, the EPA warned Americans that their tap water might be turning them into number two pencils. This might sound familiar to you if you grew up in the 80s or in Jackson, Mississippi last week. And then marketers smelled money. And soon, bottled water wasn't just about health, but a whole healthy sexual lifestyle.
Keep your body at its peak. Drink Evian. Pure Evian spring water from the French Alps.
It's refreshing, it's natural, and it doesn't have one single calorie.
Imported Perrier.
It goes with good food.
It's what I drink instead of a cocktail.
It's what I drink instead of a cocktail. Sure, but you can just say you've got DUIs, all right? We've all got DUIs. Look, props to these water companies. They turned water into something sexy as opposed to something you just need to survive. These ads were basically like, oxygen. It really helps me lay pipe. So fast forward to today. Thank you. Great performance. So fast forward to today, and the average American drinks upwards to 167 bottles a year, usually right before a long-haul flight when I'm in the aisle seat. Hey, just be an adult and wear a diaper like the rest of us? Now, you might be asking, where does all that water come from? The ocean? No, I tried that once. I got so sick. In reality, in order to get bottled water to the masses, water companies like Nestle often suck up water from public lands for little to no cost. Isn't that awesome, right? We love it when multinational conglomerates find success. The problem is, this creates a massive environmental impact. And when these companies are called out for it, they come up with explanations like this.
Nelson Switzer is Nestle Water's chief sustainability officer.
Some people would say, this is the people's water. Is it fair that you guys make so much money off of it?
Nestle has water rights, of course, in this area. From a legal standpoint, of course it's fair. From a perception standpoint, I understand why people are asking that question. But water belongs to no one.
Oh, really? Really, Nestle? Water belongs to no one? That's the dumbest thing anyone has ever said about water. And keep in mind, Gwyneth Paltrow once said that you can hurt water's feelings by yelling at it. If water really belongs to no one, then why can't I go swimming in my neighbor Eric's koi pond? Why did it scare his kids, per the police report? But sucking up all the fresh water is just the beginning of our problems. Making the bottles and shipping them to you uses 17 million barrels of oil a year. That's enough oil to fill 1 million cars for a whole year or grease up Don Jr. for one weekend. Plus, most bottles just get thrown in the trash. Oh, but I recycle it. Okay, thanks for putting it in the green bin before they send it to Malaysia, where they put it in the trash there. And the stupidest part is, it's totally, almost unnecessary. The majority of the country has access to safe, free tap water. We're transporting a product from 3,000 miles away that we can get from our kitchens. In fact, most of the bottled water we drink is literally tap water, including Aquafina and Dasani. That's right. Dasani just takes tap water, adds fart smell to it, and that's how they make Dasani. And maybe you buy natural spring water because it's healthier, but it turns out not always. In fact, a study of Fiji water found that it has more arsenic than tap water from Cleveland. Yeah, you thought bottled water was safer? Turns out it's slowly poisoning you like a wife on Dateline. So considering that tap water is good enough for the vast majority of us, the solution to the huge environmental problems of bottled water is obvious. Boom! Problem solved. Using a refillable water bottle cuts down on fossil fuels, creates less waste, and could even save you $16,000 over its lifetime. That's enough to pay for a luxury vacation or 16 shitty vacations. So long story short, this is like the easiest choice in the history of no-brainers. If everyone in the United States just went with the reusable water bottles, we'd save money, solve an environmental crisis. And the best part of that is then that's one less environmental crisis you'd have to hear people like me bitching about. You probably already have 9 of these. Open a cabinet in your kitchen and one will fall on you. And tomorrow, start using it. That's how you save the planet.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Show. My guest tonight is a wilderness guide and self-reliance expert who won season 6 of the History Channel show Alone. Please welcome Jordan Jonas. So, thanks for coming to New York City.
Yeah, what an honor. Thanks for the invite. Now I'm in your world.
Yeah, you're in my world now. Yeah. We were trying to get a hold of you. You live in Montana.
Yeah.
The booking department was freaking out. You're going to make your flight. You weren't responding to anything. And then they told me you sent this text yesterday. I literally just galloped on a horse for the last 10 miles in the wilderness so I'd be able to catch my flight in the morning. Ha, ha, ha. So, this isn't like
Here
a bullshit
are.
Act. You are a wilderness guy.
I was in the woods. Yeah, yeah. I was a fast horse, fortunately, so I made it out.
You won season 6 of History Channel's Alone. You spent 77 days alone in the Arctic. You killed a moose with a bow and arrow. Then a wolverine was trying to steal your moose meat, so you killed that with a hatchet.
Dog-eat-dog world out there.
You figured out a way to fish in the frozen tundra, which helped you win. Tell me about winning alone.
Oh, man, what a... I never pictured that as being a career opportunity. No, it was an incredible experience, man. Nothing like the pressure getting dropped off on a helicopter and you don't get another meal until you catch it.
Right.
And like that indefinitely. But you also get the pure joy that's almost hard to replicate of every time you catch a fish or a rabbit or whatever it is. It's pure joy. And like that all the way up until the end, which, yeah.
I mean, I think... It's sometimes we get so jaded watching reality TV. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you're alone.
Yeah, yeah.
No one's giving you granola bars and saying, like, here's a little salmon filet. I mean, it's really a survival show.
It is. It's cool. Yeah. It's like so, it feels so similar to what all of our ancestors used to go through, you know, and on a daily basis, just trying to survive, trying to make your way forward. And all of our dopamine, serotonin, all that is lined up with that experience, you know, kind
right.
of the modern life's a bit of a hack. But when you're out, you know, now our serotonin is released through
I do my hunting online. When you're dropped off in that situation, are you thinking, I need big game like a moose? I need reliable fishing. I mean, what's the strategy? Because you kill a moose, then you have to do something with the moose.
Right. Well, my initial thought, I mean, I for sure, my main concern was food. Like, I thought, I'm a skinny guy. I'm going to starve out here.
Yeah.
So I was all focused on food. I thought I'm going to catch a bunch of fish, make a pile of fish, and bait a bear in and hunt that.
Right.
But I didn't catch many fish to begin with and no bear, so I got an opportunity at a moose and just rolled from there.
Amazing.
Man. Yeah.
Tell me about where some of this skill set came from.
Yeah.
Because this story fascinates me, and it seems to have really affected your view on the world and affected who you are.
Yeah, when I was in my early 20s, I went over to Russia and spent a bunch of time living with nomadic reindeer herders.
Sure. That's the guy you do.
You know. next question.
Yeah. You do that in your 20s.
As you do.
Yeah.
No, but it was a fascinating experience. I didn't even know people really still live like that until I basically dropped off at the teepee. But they're nomadic, live in the wilderness year-round, follow the herds through the woods, and I learned a ton from them, and they all, of course, became good friends, and I spent a lot of years living with them, so.
You know, I should be honest with our audience. Jordan and I have met before, and I took one of your wilderness expeditions.
Awesome.
My wife and I started to watch alone during COVID, as a lot of people did, and were just blown away at the show. And also you, because you had all this amazing skill set. You could feed yourself, you could survive, but then there also seemed to be a connection and humility with nature that was really beautiful. And now I know you, I know that's all bullshit. But,
TV's
so
amazing.
My wife buys me for my birthday this wilderness survival expedition with Jordan. Honestly, after the COVID, I think she was just trying to kill me. And this is me on the right, and this is... I can't even explain to you everything about this, but I flew to Missoula, Montana. I drove 4.5 hours. Then I got on a horseback for 8 hours with you and 9 other people whose partners were trying to kill them.
Yeah.
We were at 13,000 feet, maybe, in the Bitterroot Mountains.
10,000.
10,000 feet. Let me exaggerate a little bit.
Yeah,
and you really taught us some things in a really gentle, kind way. There's a picture of you teaching us how to trap some small animals. What is this trapping device?
Talk to these
big city folk about this.
You guys all know about this. That's like basically a mouse or a rat trap. It's called a Paiute deadfall, but that's one of the...
Yeah.
If you don't trap the mice that are harassing you at night, you'll have a miserable survival experience.
I thought that would be particularly helpful for so many New Yorkers.
Yeah, I know. That's what it is. That's an excellent trap to learn.
You were so kind to me. We were walking on the mountain. We see this lake, and I don't know if you didn't have an itinerary or if out in the wilderness you don't have an itinerary.
No schedule. No
So you go, do you guys want to walk down to that lake? And we're like, yeah, of course. It took all day. It's exhausting. And we get down to the lake, and we start fishing, but we just had a little bit of fishing line. I remember you handed me this casting reel. I had a hook. I threw the casting reel in the lake. I was holding on to my hook, but it was not natural for me. Is it important for you to introduce people to nature in this way?
I mean,
you could have easily been like, Jesus Christ, you threw the wrong thing into the lake.
No, I actually love it, man. I feel like it's so important for people, especially in the modern world, to be able to escape. And I love, you know, it's awesome to be able to empower people to go out there and experience what nature does have to offer.
Who did that for you? Where did you learn?
Well, I kind of grew up on a farm in Idaho, and that helped, but I really learned a lot living with the natives, I'd say. You know, that's kind of what set my knowledge base apart.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So then Jordan just grabs, like, some fishing rod, a stick and some fishing line, and he just gets, like, 11 fish. Here's a picture of that. That's where we camped that night, and then he didn't just cook them, like, rudimentary style. He did a nice little smoke. Here's the fire with the fish on it. He's, you know, tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, alder. You know, so up in the northern regions, alder's a great smoking wood. So yep. I like to lay those green alder sticks down on top of the coals, put your fish on top of that. Delicious.
It was excellent. Tell me about, let's say, hunting. People can have a reaction to hunting,
mm-hmm.
big game hunting.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy for me to see pictures online and see this thing and go, I don't like this, you're killing an animal.
Right.
I also feel like you care a lot about nature and conservation.
Yeah.
How can those two be connected?
Tell me that's actually a really fascinating question. I think we are, no matter what we think, we're a part of nature.
Yeah.
And in my experience, people who hunt, who rely on nature to, you know, feed themselves or families, there's few people that are more in tune with the health of a particular ecosystem because you rely on it. So though you do take individual animals at times, you know, according to all the laws and all that, you're also really, you know, wishing the best for the species and working to, you know, provide that through via conservation, which is, you know, as when you're hunting, you're paying money into the system. They put that money back into the science and the habitat protection that protects animals. So interestingly enough, the good news is we've done a great job of conservation and have brought, you know, whitetail and elk and all these animals that from the brink of extinction to, you know, thriving numbers through ethical hunting, you know.
Yeah.
I can understand the knee jerk. Yeah.
You see these pictures but I think one thing that really was beneficial for me, I'm not a hunter, mm-hmm. but I definitely fished and killed a grouse mm-hmm. that week because I was starving.
Right.
And you said, we're only going to eat what we can procure for the next 36 hours. Well, guess what? Costa doesn't really procure much. But man, and this is silly. It's going to be silly to you.
No.
And maybe silly to everybody else. But when I took this little grouse's life, mm-hmm. it really meant something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sad to me.
Yeah.
But we then cleaned it. We cooked it that night. It was my dinner. And I just thought on the flight home, I made a lot of notes. I had so much I had to be thankful for.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'd never been that close to my food before.
You appreciate it so
I go
much,
to the grocery store. I buy mm-hmm. 4 pounds of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Three of it goes in the trash. I mean, it's like, man, that was like such a different connection. And that's gone for the most part from
valuable.
Us.
Valuable. Yeah, I know. I think we've all been disconnected. You were talking about packaging earlier.
Right.
You know, everything just comes in
a package. That was Ronnie, the other guy. But
it's important to have that connection with our food. Otherwise, it just all happens on a farm or in a field somewhere,
and
you can act like you're not a part of the system, but we are. So we should do our job well.
Yeah, I bought your axe.
Ooh.
Okay, so
you got any potted plants?
People on the subway were looking at me weird, but Tell me about this style of axe. You used a similar axe on Alone.
Yeah.
And tell me some of the characteristics of this axe. To me, an axe is for chopping wood you buy at the gas station when you're on vacation, but you actually used it as a survival tactic.
Yeah, so I'm a real connoisseur of a good axe. And after I...
Has anybody at the Daily Show ever had an axe out here before? Absolutely not.
So the features, I kind of combined all the things I like in an axe into one. It has it's the right length, the right weight and size. Yeah. It's got a single bevel edge, which if you'd like to pull that off.
I'll do this and I'll cut myself.
Yeah, careful. She's sharp.
They are sharp. So this is, here, I'll let you do it, dude. Why am I doing this?
So there you go. It's sharpened from one side so that you're left-handed,
That's
see.
That's right, yep.
So if I was left-handed, it's got that flat edge. I can carve and whittle like that really well. Chop trees down.
You use the axe for so much more than chopping trees down.
You do. You do a lot of carving and building things for yourself when you're out there. And so that's why I like that single bevel. It's got a slip-on tomahawk-style head, which is what the Evenki, the native folks, did in Russia. It just makes it easier to repair. I have a little wedge. And it's got kind of the Siberian design, which I like. Wide cutting edge.
It's very cool.
Yeah, it's a sweet.
I feel like a poser
axe.
That I have it, but
Well, like I said, I don't see any plants.
Any potted
here,
plants
so
around
must
here?
Must have been putting it to work.
You've come a long way to chat with me. I really appreciate it. Your Instagram is fascinating. There's so many great videos and pictures of you with your kids doing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What's the goal there? I mean, if it's a kid, my kid, I tell him to do so. I take my kid to the tennis court, and she stands in the corner and kicks leaves. Are you worried your kids aren't going to love and appreciate nature?
No, that's a good question. I think they will, but I don't want to force anything on them. They might come live here, as far as I know. But I want them to have the... So it's a great place.
I love when New Yorkers hear from other people what they think about New York.
No, but I want them to have the ability to tap into nature, because in the modern world, with all the distractions and all the, psychological issues, there's almost nothing like being able to get out in nature, disconnect, and be, understand your thoughts and all that. And so I want to make sure they can always have the skills and ability to create that space for themselves. And so
I'm convinced, my daughter's 3.5, I'm convinced if we take a walk outside and I put my phone somewhere else, a lot of stuff gets solved. Just walking together outside, that's my little parenting hack. But is there a survival skill that you could recommend to everybody to learn, or is there a hack for connecting to nature if you live in a high rise in the Upper West Side of New York or Brooklyn, or you don't have a car, you can't get upstate?
Yeah.
You guys in Montana take all this shit for granted. But, I have one tree on my street.
Right.
And the way people drive, I think, sure, it's gonna come down someday. So.
Well, I gotta say, I feel like there's a lot of value in setting aside a period of time, even if it's just yearly, to go out in the woods and spend enough time to where your phone is off and you really do have time to think your thoughts and to talk with the people that you're around. And I think even just doing that occasionally will recharge you enough to get back into the chaos of the modern world with a little better, more level head and priorities in line.
What about a survival tactic? What's one little thing?
You do got to know how to build a fire.
Fire.
So okay. I usually carry a lighter.
Well, I'm glad you said that. Let me, I'm just. One of the things that I loved was when we get on the horseback, it was kind of raining, and you started grabbing things off of the tree, a little bark.
Yeah.
And you put it in your pocket. It's raining. Mm-hmm. Everything's wet.
Mm-hmm.
And you put it in your pocket. And I go, what are you doing? You go, well, in 9 hours from now, when we need a fire at night, this will be dry. And I was like, you're thinking more further ahead about this than I do about my career, my family. Is that an important part of me? I mean, are you always, even on Alone, it seems like you're always thinking a few steps ahead. You have to be.
Yeah, you always try to plan ahead. Things never quite work out as you plan, but... I think so.
Okay, build a fire. So the key to building a fire is what?
Have dry tinder, so find some good dry stuff or take it with you. Cotton ball with Vaseline's good. And then I always have two ways of starting a fire. An easy one, like a lighter, and then the ferro rod, which you're a master of. And so, and that's like a fail-safe way of starting a fire. That way, no matter what happens, you're warm.
Yeah. Don't start fires in your apartments. Don't start fires through lithium batteries on scooters. That's New York's problem. But Jordan Jonas, thank you for being here. I really appreciate you making it the whole way. You're an honor to talk with you. Yeah. Thank you very much, Jordan Jonas.
Explore more shows from The Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, D. Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.